Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are cracking open the playbook of people who get exactly what they want, when they want it, without, you know, turning into a total jerk in the process.
That really is the dream, isn't it?
It is.
Because when most of us hear negotiation, we automatically picture something, something antagonistic.
Right. A high-stakes corporate merger, or that exhausting back and forth when you're buying a car.
We think of it as a confrontation, but it's not.
But the truly inconvenient truth, and this is what we've really extracted from our analysis, is that negotiation isn't just for boardrooms. It's for nearly every interaction you have.
Oh, absolutely. It's often subtly woven into, the fabric of daily life.
For sure.
Just think about your day. Deciding where to live, figuring out how to split chores, collaborating on a project at work. I mean, you are constantly engaged in these low-grade negotiations.
Which means being a good negotiator is... It's absolutely crucial, not just so you can get better deals, but, and I think this is way more important, so you can maintain healthy, sustainable relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So our mission today is a deep dive into the 5 surprising rules used by expert negotiators. We want to give you a shortcut to shifting your mindset from that zero-sum haggling to genuinely collaborative problem solving.
And the basics are always important, don't get me wrong. Preparation, preparation, preparation. But today we are going beyond that foundation. We're going to unpack the most counterintuitive tactics.
Like what?
Like understanding the psychological power of knowing precisely when to just shut up.
Okay, let's get into this. But before we even get to the 5 core rules, we have to clear the air, right? We've got to address the common myths that hold people back.
That's essential. Because
yeah.
The first hurdle is always internal. The main myth we have to dispense with is that negotiation is inherently argumentative.
That it's a fight.
Exactly. If you feel like you are fighting, you're already doing it wrong.
Mm.
A proper negotiation is a facilitated conversation. It's aimed at finding a win-win outcome.
And then there's that stereotype, you see it a lot, that negotiating is only for, cheapskates.
Right. People trying to nickel and dime you.
Yeah.
But the research actually suggests the complete opposite. The most successful people in the world, they negotiate constantly.
You're not kidding.
I mean, look at high-level business leaders, politicians. Billionaires like Richard Branson didn't build empires by just accepting the first offer that came their way.
He's fighting for value, not just the price.
Precisely. That's the mindset shift.
And the third myth is about appropriateness. And we have to be clear on this. Context matters. Don't hold up the line at Boots bartering over an overpriced razor.
Please don't do that.
But it's almost never inappropriate to pursue an outcome that's important to you as long as you do it respectfully. You have to pick your battles, but you can't be afraid to articulate value.
And once you get past those myths, the bedrock of successful negotiation comes into view. And it's always, always trust and rapport.
Your secret sauce.
That's it. Before you even discuss a single number, you have to establish a positive relationship.
Because trust really is the cornerstone, isn't it? If you don't trust the person across the table, you'll hoard information.
And they will too. The Harvard Business School perspective on this is very clear. You have to proactively create an environment where both parties feel respected, heard, and valued.
And how do you do that?
Well, one of the fastest ways is through genuine active listening. True master negotiators, they understood that the goal isn't just waiting for your turn to talk.
Mm-hmm.
It's using that time to pay forensic attention to the other person's interests, their concerns, their objectives.
So by listening and, say, summarizing their points back to them, you're signaling that you get it. You're showing respect.
And empathy.
Yeah.
Which builds the groundwork for creative solutions later on. When the other side feels understood, they're far more likely to reciprocate.
And that leads to the next piece, right?
Yeah.
Transparency and collaboration.
It flows naturally from there. Being upfront about your core objectives and even your genuine limitations, it shows you're negotiating in good faith. You're basically defining the problem you need to solve together.
So instead of locking horns over one thing, you're inviting them to collaborate.
And that creates a sense of shared ownership. It stops being my win versus their win and becomes our solution.
Mm-hmm.
And finally on this, you just can't overlook cultural awareness. You know, understanding the background of the person you're dealing with helps you avoid misunderstandings. It just strengthens the connection.
Okay, so we've built the foundation. Let's get tactical. Rule number one, probably the most famous, but also, as you said, the most misunderstood. Never speak first.
And the research is so clear on this. The true rule is actually don't make the first offer. Not don't speak first. In fact, you should speak first, but you do it strategically to prompt the other party.
Why does that matter so much?
It all comes down to cognitive psychology, something called the anchoring effect.
Great. The first number thrown out sets the entire reference point for everything that follows.
For everything. And the danger is simple. Let's say they're willing to sell an item for, say, 10,000 pounds. But you open by offering 15,000. You've just anchored the entire negotiation way above where it needed to be. You shot yourself in the foot and immediately capped how well you could do.
So the final price is going to land somewhere near your 15,000, even though you could have gotten it for way less.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So your goal when you speak first is to strategically prompt them to drop the anchor. You control the conversation without giving your position away.
How do you do that?
Simple prompts work wonders. Instead of saying, I'll give you 5,000 for that, you just ask, so how much are you asking for it?
Or what time frame were you thinking for this project?
Perfect. You speak first, you gather data, and you offer second. That's rule one.
Which flows seamlessly into rule two. This one's arguably the most awkward, but it's shockingly effective. No one to shut up.
This is where we get into the deep psychology. So the scenario is simple. They make an offer, and you respond with just a measured, non-committal sound.
Like a hmm.
A simple hmm. Or a slow, reflective nod. And then you just embrace the silence.
Which, for most people, is absolutely unbearable. It creates this void, this tension.
And that tension is the entire point. When you deny them that expected response, they get uncomfortable. But more than that, they become fearful. Loss aversion kicks in.
They start worrying their offer was too high or that they might lose the deal completely.
Right. And that fear and discomfort often prompts them to speak first, to fill the void by negotiating against themselves.
So they might say something like, well, look, I know that price is high, but I could possibly take another 10% off.
And you have just gained ground, not by counteroffering, just by holding your nerve for a few really uncomfortable seconds.
Okay, but here's the crucial warning. What if you're on the receiving end of that silence?
Yes. The key here is do not start haggling against yourself. That is the classic amateur mistake.
Don't just keep offering a better price while they sit there.
No. Yeah. You have to consciously remind yourself, okay, this silence is a tactic. It's designed to put pressure on me. The power has actually shifted to you just by enduring it.
So what do you do? How do you break it without giving something away?
You can just repeat the core of your offer. Or, even better, you prompt them. You could say, that is my best offer today. What's your alternative proposal?
The ball is back in their court.
Firmly. And you deny them the concession they were silent fishing for.
Right. So moving beyond those immediate tactics, rules 3, 4, and 5 are more about the bigger picture, the long-term success of the whole thing.
This is where the real expertise lies, I think.
Rule 3. It's not all about the money. This feels counterintuitive. Money is a huge motivator.
Of course it is. But focusing purely on the price tag can blind you to the full landscape of what people value. You know, security, convenience, recognition, appreciation.
The underlying interest is rarely just the number. It's what that number allows them to do or feel.
Exactly. Let's look at that example from the research, the one about the friend dating the nurse who always wanted to eat out.
Right. The friend was focused on the bills piling up. His position was, we need to stop spending so much money on food.
And if he'd led with that, the negotiation would have failed. Because he misidentified her position, her true underlying interest. It wasn't the restaurant itself.
It was about feeling appreciated, pampered.
Yes. She spent 12 hours a day taking care of people. The restaurant was the one place she felt cared for.
So the solution wasn't finding cheaper restaurants?
No. The solution was finding a different currency of value. So the friend started cooking these elaborate dinners at home a few times a week, candles, the whole bit. He saved a ton of money, but more importantly, he maximized the value for her.
She got the pampering and attention she actually craved.
And the relationship improved dramatically. The financial argument was completely irrelevant compared to the emotional interest at play. That's the takeaway.
Which leads perfectly into rule 4. There's more than one route to a deal.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go in with just one acceptable outcome, like a single price point, you're massively limiting your potential.
You are. This is all about exploring trade-offs. We often confuse our position, what we demand, with our interest, what we actually need.
Let's run that supplier example. So your boss sends you to negotiate a contract. Your only goal is a 20% price reduction.
Right. And you might get it. You might bully them into that 20% reduction. But in doing so, you could miss a much, much better outcome for your company.
Like what?
Like a secure supply chain. The supplier, desperate to keep the business, might have offered, say, a 15% reduction plus a 2-year guaranteed contract. Price caps, minimum supply levels.
So a slightly smaller discount now for massive security later.
Exactly. I mean, what's the cost of shutting down your production line for a week? That extra 5% price cut looks tiny compared to the value of 2 years of reliability.
So the supply guarantee was actually far more valuable to the boss.
It could have been, yeah. The lesson is, get creative with things you don't care much about, but the other side values highly. That's where great deals are made. It's also why having a BNA, a best alternative to a negotiated agreement, is so important. It gives you the power to walk away and seek those creative options.
That holistic view of value leads us right to the final and maybe most important rule. Rule 5. If someone loses, it's a bad deal.
This is the big one. It requires us to completely abandon that zero-sum mindset.
So why are win-lose deals considered so unsustainable by experts?
Because they destroy the relationship. And nearly every negotiation that matters involves an ongoing relationship.
Business or personal?
Both. So let's follow that supplier example. You back them into a corner, you got your 20% cut, they feel cheated.
6 months later, they find a new buyer who'll pay more.
And they walk. They find a loophole or just wait for the contract to end. And suddenly your big win, that 20% reduction, has caused catastrophic supply chain chaos.
And massive long-term costs. Your short-term win created a long-term failure.
That's the lesson. If you're negotiating, you probably want to deal with that person again. If they feel exploited, they will replace you the second they can.
So the whole point of using rules 3 and 4, finding those other forms of value, is to preserve the partnership.
Yes. So you can solve the problem together and both walk away feeling good about it. A successful relationship is a successful negotiation strategy.
Okay, so let's try and pull this all together. Let's recap the big principles you should internalize from this.
It really begins and ends with preparation. You have to know your objectives, and you have to truly understand the other side's underlying interests.
Then use active listening to build that foundation of trust.
Mm-hmm.
Employ strategic communication, prompting, that powerful, uncomfortable silence.
And finally, and this is the big one, approach it not as a battle, but as collaborative problem solving. Focus on mutual value, on sustainability.
And these principles apply everywhere, don't they? From a disagreement at home to a massive business deal.
Everywhere. Effective negotiation is just effective communication. It leads to better outcomes and healthier relationships. Full stop.
If you approach it as solving a problem together, you'll just find so many more opportunities for value.
And that strategic focus on the long term brings us to our final provocative thought. When you're seeking an agreement today, are you prioritizing the immediate quantifiable gain, that bit of extra money right now? Or are you prioritizing the long-term unquantifiable benefit, a reliable, happy partner, and a sustainable relationship?
That distinction between the immediate cash and the sustainable connection is often the singular difference between a good negotiator and a truly expert one.
Food for thought. Thank you for joining us for the deep dive.